The North Star here has to be generational wealth. It has to be make value today, spend less than you earn, and you pass the rest to the next generation or launch it into the future. What did it, 5X in 2020? Well, hey, if we 5X off all-time high, I mean, we're looking at $500,000. I'm going to call out all you American Bitcoiners. Y'all are soft, dude. You guys don't know. Canada has the highest rate of Bitcoiners than any other country in the world. We are crushing it. You know, I've been debanked since 2016, 2017-ish. You know, almost like, why would I keep my coins on a different platform?
So is that playing a role in here where you're being sneaky with me, Adam, where you're saying, hey, I can earn more Bitcoin with all of this too?
Yeah, man, I think so.
Bing bong. We are back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Adam O'Brien, live in Austin, Texas here. But Adam, we were just talking about it a little bit pre-show. Michael Saylor, the bull tard himself, just tweeted one of the most bullish things ever. We just had the FASB coming on. There's a lot of hubbub and rumor going around about Michael Saylor with the SBR and everything. So how influential do you think Michael Saylor and Strategy are going to be in this year, 2025, the year of our Lord, 2025, man?
Man, I don't know, man. I'm struggling with the Saylor narrative only because it's all lining up really, really good for some potential catastrophe. We know centralization of Bitcoin bad. We know giving the control of Bitcoin to other people is bad. And we know that when Wall Street and the government work together, it's bad. And that seems like kind of what's happening here. But it looks like it's setting up for some pretty serious number to go up. So as long as you are acting responsible in a macro irresponsible environment, maybe you'll be okay. Maybe it's going to be fine.
Well, what is this number go up thing you're telling me about, Adam? I'm going to put you on the spot here, brother. What are we looking at?
Dude, so okay, if you look at the history, and this is what Saylor tweeted. This is why, you know, it's kind of top of mind. So we had this we had this exact same looking chart in 2020 where we kind of had a nice big run up and then a sharp dip, a little like, what do you call that? Like a little cave, the Bart. And then it was just like explosion where, what did it, 5X in 2020? Well, hey, if we 5X off all-time high, I mean, we're looking at $500,000. I actually have an open bet live on Twitter. I don't know who it's with, to be honest, but someone on Twitter and 100K sats that we will see 500K Bitcoin in 2025. But I'm just like a hopeless bulltard. So what do you know?
I don't think that's hopeless at all, my brother. I think that's some bullish news. So what do you think takes us over the edge there? Because we've had a lot of bullish things come along since the last time we spoke, which I believe was in Nashville.
Yeah, years ago.
So at this point, we've had what? The SAB 121 getting repealed so banks can now custody Bitcoin. We've gotten the FASB. So now the accounting for big businesses. We got the ETFs humming and rolling. So what do you think is going to really take us to that next level, or is it a combination of everything?
It's a combination of that and then plus time. Like, we, you know, when you got to think, we've been in a retail focused Bitcoin for 10-11 years, and you know, I don't know about you, but when I make a decision, I act on it in like 30 to 45 seconds generally. Yeah. For a business who's got a board and $100 million to manage, they're like 30 to 45 weeks, or maybe, you know, 12 months or maybe longer. And so I think that all this stuff happening started the process for these businesses and these corporations to start building their policies. Cause in their mind, it's like, well, it's nothing certain. Why would we waste time and energy and money doing this before we're like certain it's there? Now it's there. What was that, 4 or 5 months ago where all this kind of stuff started happening? So for the last 4 or 5 months, these big bureaucratic organizations have been working at like a moderate to slow pace. We probably have 4 or 5 months left of that. And then it's, you know, start the bulls.
Uh-oh, we're off to the races. We're holding that red flag in front of them and we're just tempting them at this point.
Humpty was telling me last night that there's a bar that he loves to go to where the women get to ride the bull for free if they go on topless. Oh. It feels like that is where we're going to be going to in the future.
I heard Opti only goes to that bar when his girlfriend, the Lizard Lagarde, comes in and is doing that. But hey, I mean, neither here nor there, man. Whatever your type is, go for it, man. But we've got him sitting in the crowd here as well. So we're just ripping on him while he's off camera giggling.
No chance to defend himself.
Yeah, zero chance whatsoever. But we're sitting here and everybody's feeling a little bit bearish right now because we've had Trump come in. I think everybody just kind of assumed it would be up and to the right when Trump's come in. So what do you think of the start here so far? What, he's been in like 2 months, not even. And, you know, I know you're coming in at the 51st state looking down at us. But yeah, how are you looking at this, the first crypto president, so to speak?
Yeah, man, I think as anticipated, like we've got a guy who's sporadic and chaotic setting the stage. I know that, you know, Bitcoin Twitter likes to make everything exaggerated and then shorten its timeline. And I think that as a result, that actually is a negative for Bitcoin in the fact that it raises our time preference. Everyone kind of on Bitcoin Twitter has this high time preference where it's like, hey, we voted. Hey, he's in. Why is my bag not pumped? But we have to remember, yo, Bitcoin is for your grandkids. Bitcoin is for the next 100, the next 1500 years, more, plus. And, you know, does it matter if it pumps in January or if it pumps in October or even if it pumps in, let's say it takes 5 years. Let's say Trump does nothing and sets the stage for Vance or whoever the incoming, you know, next election cycle is going to be. Like, is that a bad thing? You know, personally, I think that if we lower our time preference, you know, adopt a true Bitcoin and Bitcoiner ethos, focus on self-custody, focus on the infrastructure, focus on generational wealth, this is good. This is a net positive. But you're right, like, it's been quote unquote disappointing. People feel bearish, but I think that people's feelings have proven to be wrong time and time again. Focus on facts, not feelings. The facts of the matter are Bitcoin's not going anywhere. Your grandkids are going to be sovereign and safer because of Bitcoin. And that's a huge win.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think at this point, everybody's just getting a little bit emotional, right? I mean, Where we see Trump coming in, we all think it's going to be peaches and daisies. But hey, like, the economy wasn't in a great spot when he got into the office. So, you know, it is kind of interesting, right? We were kind of tossing around, hey, this could be the first bull run where we see a recession last time we spoke. Do you still have that feeling where the macro kind of environment here might not be as good as we were hoping? Like, I mean, maybe Bitcoin's running, but then, like, what does that mean for everything else?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that kind of, this is the fork in the road. Does Bitcoin decouple from the macro, from the masses, from the mainstream this cycle or some cycle in the future? And I think that when we look at what the quote unquote macro is, it's largely surrounded around economic certainty and oil. Those are kind of the two things that drive the entire world, coupled with some war in there. And so we've got a high war environment, lots of turbulence going on. The macroeconomic place is brutal. Like, it's very, very bad. Bitcoiners know that Bitcoin fixes those things. Does the world, does the mass population, does society understand that if you flock to Bitcoin, you're inherently, you know, solving or playing your piece and solving the war problem. And it's a safe haven from the macro on a long term. Personally, I don't know if we've seen enough pain yet for Bitcoin to actually decouple. I think that the decoupling happens because people have been beaten to a pulp and they realize that the safest way out is Bitcoin. I don't think anyone's, you know, pulped yet. I think that we're seeing the pain, right? I saw a chart today where the price of eggs is like crashing. Okay, that's good. Like, we're seeing some semblance that, you know, people are waking up and realizing what's happening. But I don't know if, you know, if we walked outside right now and kind of asked people like, hey, you know, what causes inflation and how do you solve that? None of them would say monetary policy. None of them would say printing. None of them would say like, it's the trillions of dollars of debt that we have and the rising interest. It would just be like, you know, oh, inflation, government or corporate greed and a bunch of bad people manipulate. It's like, you know, you're wrong.
Elon or something. Yeah, like, yeah. That, right? I mean, they would probably just throw him under the bus or something.
Yo, isn't
like that
crazy? Just like quickly on the note of Elon, the left he was the left's like pride and joy. And then all of a sudden, just a complete 180 from the left, where now the right are praising him and the left want to seemingly sewer him.
Yeah. Well, you know what's crazy? The most ironic thing about all of this is that essentially, like, Tesla, you know, had all those credits from being this electric powered company or whatever, and a green company that gave them all these governmental credits. And then he used that to buy Twitter. now they hate him because he owns Twitter. So essentially the left funded him buying Twitter.
But, Elon playing 4D chess, man.
Exactly. But I've had a couple interesting conversations here with people where they think that Elon might be more influential for Bitcoin, and Trump might be influential for Bitcoin in this next cycle than maybe Michael Saylor, just because of utilizing X, the free speech, all of that stuff. And then Trump, of course, SBR and all the different things that he's doing. Do you agree with that statement, or do you still think Saylor is, you know, because he's kind of got his fingers in all of this, that, you know, even though it's the more quote-unquote influential people, Saylor's kind of work in the strings behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think that they probably work in tandem. Saylor is understands Bitcoin, or seemingly understands Bitcoin a lot better. He'll orange pill the businesses. But ultimately, like, businesses follow the signal. They kind of have to. Mm-hmm. I think that we've seen that with, you know, we went through a period of time dictate what people liked. You know, we saw the woke movement, and we saw, you know, kind of retail clash back on that, and I think put corporations in their space. So ultimately, corporations, businesses have to follow the retail. And so Saylor doing a good job prepping and priming business for Bitcoin. But dude, 99 out of 100 people do not know who Michael Saylor is. Probably less than 99 out of 100 people know who Michael Saylor is. And you know, on conversely, Elon and Trump, like, they could tweet a poop emoji and get hundreds of millions of views, especially because he literally owns the megaphone. Elon owns the largest megaphone on planet Earth. So just by sheer mass, he'll have the most influence. It won't be the most direct, but I say this kind of playing out like a game of golf. If you've got Elon and Trump as the driver, they just got to get it as far as possible down the hole. And then you got Saylor coming in as like a little tiny chipping, you know, getting it close to the hole. But then ultimately, you know, it's the Bitcoin OGs and the Bitcoin, you know, media, and the high signal is the putter dialed in and getting it directly into the bottom of the cup. And I think that, you know, we can all work together to hopefully bring this maxi dream to life, where it's like hyper Bitcoinization, you know, Bitcoin in self-custody, and everybody's winning.
Dude, I like that. I like that analogy there.
Yeah.
I mean, let's go hit a round of 18 now.
Let's go, man. Geez.
But, you know, with that too, you talked about the businesses and orange pilling that. I have, one, let's just dive in. How influential do you think that's going to be? Do you think any of the Magnificent Seven or anything like that we'll see start to implement this? Because we had Microsoft basically say hell no. But I mean, I think at a certain point it's like they're talking about it, right?
Yeah.
Amazon is going to be putting on a vote, I believe, late April, and then one other that's slipping my mind right now is going to be also like looking into it. But that's like three out of the seven, right? And then we've got Tesla already owns Bitcoin, Nvidia basically connected to Bitcoin because of AI and everything else. So, you know, how significant of a role do you think it's going to play in the corporate balance sheet side of things within the rest of this year?
My favorite thing about Bitcoin is meeting Bitcoiners in person. That's why I'm so excited to tell you guys about what is going on June 14th down in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. That's the Sound Money Soiree paired with Bitcoin Day. They're bringing a full day of great talks with amazing speakers like your boy here. And we're topping it off with a black tie event just for you and bring in that hot lady friend. We have Bitcoin cross 100K. We're all getting girlfriends, folks. So come on down to beautiful Tampa, Florida. And if you use the link below, you will get 10% off your entire order, whether you want to go to just the black tie event or black tie event plus Bitcoin Day. You'll get 10% off using the links below. Also, if you're thinking about going to BitBlock Boom in April, if you're going to Vegas in May, or if you're thinking about going to Prague in June, use my promo code GREENCANDLE for all of those. You'll get 10% off your entire order. And come bug me. I hope to see you guys very soon at one of these great in-person events. Enough of me. Back to the show.
So I actually probably don't think that I think that the mass buying pressure that we experience with the ETFs and the mass buying pressure we experience with MicroStrategy and the mass buying pressure we experience with all the corporations doesn't affect the market as much as we assume, because there's a pile of opposite pressure from, you know, the manipulators and whoever else. And so I think that the greatest thing that does is provide legitimacy to retail and to the plebs. I think that I truly believe that for the first time, we have a financial ecosystem that where the power lies in the hands of the plebs. And I think that it'll be the plebs that ultimately like drive this forward. And so anything that creates more plebs and gives the plebs more confidence, like if you live in a completely fiatized environment and you're looking up, you know, you're moderately interested in finance, you see that Amazon snuck by with a vote of, you know, like to approve Bitcoin. Maybe now you're like, I better investigate, you know, Bitcoin. And then you stumble on a Green Candle podcast and you hear a high signal and you're like, damn, I like that. I'm gonna keep on diving in. Maybe then you go to bitcoinwell.com and you buy some Bitcoin into self-custody and you're like, boom, I'm all in now. And then here we go. And then you can see how this progression, and like, you know, the spark that was lit was because of some Amazon vote. But again, like back to the, you know, the driver, the chipping wedge, and then the putter, like it's a journey, man. And it's a Bitcoin journey that sometimes, like, you know, I've been on my Bitcoin journey for 12 years and I sometimes forget, like, 12 years. And if, you know, someone's been in it for 12 days, you can't expect them to kind of see the whole forest through the trees, so to speak. So I do think that they are influential, but not directly. I think they're actually going to be more, in hindsight, it'll be more indirect influence rather than direct influence.
Okay. I do have one question, one potential little wrench in all of this. I think that there's one man who could be more influential in all of this than Michael Saylor, and that's Mark Zuckerberg. Before you freak out on me, this is why I think this is because Facebook, Meta, whatever the hell it's called now, Mark Zuckerberg has more voting rights there than Michael Saylor does currently at Strategy. Of course, he's already implemented that. Look, he's going through this full rebrand. He's got the chain popping. He's got the hair going crazy. He's riding the surfboard with the American flag. The full rebrand could be just implementing Bitcoin on Meta's balance sheet. And they've got a bunch of cash just sitting there ready to go. Do you think I'm crazy for thinking
no,
that?
No, man. I love Zuck for the Bitcoin revolution. Actually, we did a video on Future Proof about Zuck. And people hated it, man. Like, really, really hit it. Started calling me a Zuck simp and like all this bad stuff. And that was, to me, that was really interesting. I thought, whoa, like Zuck's doing something right.
Yeah. You
know? Everyone hates him. That man's doing something right. And so I think the way that he's structured Meta to have all the voting rights is ridiculous to be able to maintain that much control, like in a good way. And he's obviously found, you know, problems with monetary policy. We've seen a political shift and transition from him. I think that as far as a dark horse goes, I would plant Zuck as the dark horse for having mass influence. But again, like not directly, even if Zuck deployed 100% of his cash into Bitcoin, whoever's manipulating the market right now, BlackRock and all the, you know, evil people, they're going to just counteract that trade. This is the long, like if you're in Bitcoin for short-term gains, get out, come back when you're ready for long-term gains. And so like Zuck buying, deploying, maybe a little pump, hooray, hooray, some green candles. Nice. But I don't know that it means like, you know, go order your Lambo. I think it means like, learn that you don't want a Lambo and then you can come back. And so Zuck is lowering his time preference, getting more based, starting to think for himself, getting out of corporate America and into what is the new way of building a business. And yeah, man, massive influence for sure.
Okay. Well, you said new way of building a business. Obviously, you've got Bitcoin Well. Since you came on the show, you announced that Bitcoin Well is putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Are you going to be the Canadian sailor man? Is that where sitting in the flesh right now?
Yeah, man. Someone said that. They called me the Canadian sailor and I was like, ooh, I kind of like that. But also I'm like, you know, holding our own coins. Like it's in self-custody. But yeah, I think that so I was originally super, super bearish on the MicroStrategy play, not fully understanding it. And then as I did more research, you know, like when I learned about Bitcoin, I went into like trying to disprove it and then learning more about it and then understanding that it's ultimately the winner. And so I did that same thing with the Saylor strategy. And I think what it gave me was a bunch of confidence that we have a instrument where people like our business and want to buy equity in our business, and our business equity will get more valuable as we stack Bitcoin and deliver on our mission. And I think that during this time when we all believe that Bitcoin is cheap, it's a no-brainer to add Bitcoin to the balance sheet. So we're going to start doing a little bit more. I've got some strategies in the works right now. Actually, probably by the time this goes live, we will be actively deploying a strategy to be stacking Bitcoin like weekly as a as a company. Every single week, it's, you know, small amounts. Like, we're a tiny, tiny company. But small amounts. And I think that DCA, that's like the pleb strategy, right? Small amounts, frequently, regardless of price. This is the holy grail of buying Bitcoin.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because they talk about the corporate strategy, right, of buying Bitcoin and Michael Saylor, and you just see the announcement maybe like once a week or whatever it is from Saylor's Twitter, but really he doesn't have to do that, right? Because of just, you know, being a publicly traded company, he can announce that every quarter if he'd like. He just likes to be more open. So how do you view balancing that of being a full on like publicly traded company and trying to be public basically with everything?
I think that like the way that corporations were built was not for today. Corporations were built, like public corporations were built pre-internet. I think that the reporting standards are in a pre-internet standard. I think that Bitcoin allows and enables for more transparency. And that's how I like to operate. We put out piles of news releases, you know, updating our shareholders on user count, on volume, on, you know, new products that are being released, and on our holdings, our Bitcoin holdings. And so I think that why wouldn't, like, it's so funny. One of my tweets, like I have like 6,000 followers on Twitter. Like I've got no following. And one of my tweets gets more views than one of our formal press releases. But the TSX, like the Toronto Stock Exchange, only deems the formal press release as legitimate disclosure. Like it's so hilarious and archaic that they, you know, it's like, well, why is that the case? Well, we want everyone to have a chance to see it. It's like, but like the, you know, the Twitter thread is 10x what the wire is. So it's just hilarious how archaic that system is. So of course we abide by all the rules, but I believe in over transparency. Like I truly, you know, when I built this business, I was a solopreneur, did it all on my own. And when we went public, I got hundreds, maybe thousands of new shareholders. And so I bring them in the same way that I appreciate being brought in on some of the other businesses that I'm a part of. And I think that that's kind of the way it should be.
There we go. And we'll get into more about what Bitcoin Well is doing here in a little bit. But you brought up something interesting, how you think the old way is archaic. What I think has been really interesting with the way Trump has handled everything is he announced the crypto summit like Friday after five. He announced some things like Sunday late at night. You know, he did some things where, you know, we saw these almost like a pump and dump kind of things where it's like, hey, Bitcoin's 24/7, 365. Now, do you think Bitcoin's almost going to be revolutionizing things where it's like revolutionizing business and maybe even like the stock market, everything else? Because now it's like, hey, everything was archaic. We're going to move into this new digital age, which is 24/7, 365.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get wishing well tokens. You flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000, and they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage, and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin, and that's self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough for me, back to the show.
Big time, man. So actually, in its 15 years, Bitcoin has already had more trading time than the New York Stock Exchange since, like, whenever it opened in the 20s or, like, whatever. Like, it's crazy. And I think that you can see what happens when you have a monopoly. We have a monopoly in financial markets. And as a result, there's been little to no innovation. You know, it's markets open for 7 hours a day. Disclosures happen on one single delivery area. And then you have this protocol come in, which completely changes the game. And what do you know? Everyone's benefiting and everyone's better as a result. We are going to continue seeing some turbulence. We're going to continue seeing this butting heads. You know, the fact that TradFi cannot participate on a real-time basis is an obvious barrier. You know, go figure. Monopolies create bad things for those that try to be monopolistic. The Cobra effect is real. And I think that as we continue to progress down this timeline, we're going to see the fiat markets kind of create like more aftermarket trading, more like 24/7, 365 access to the economy and to the markets. And I think that's a feature, not a bug. I think that, you know, on one hand, I'm a little bit like, you know, it's probably not awesome if everyone's like got FOMO and the markets are going to be, but that'll be some turbulence. But then eventually things are going to smooth out and it's going to eventually become so non-turbulent. Like on a Bitcoin standard, things are pretty stable and pretty relaxed, and it'll just be optional input into the economy. And I think that's what we want to go towards. Right now, the economy dictates when you transact. You have to get up at a certain time if you want to trade. You have to, you know, be doing certain things at a certain time. But when you have a non-turbulent, you know, consistent economy, you can just pick and choose. Your life you get a little bit more control in your life as to when you transact. And again, that's like better for individuals and better for general population.
Do you think it almost causes an issue though? Because then it's like, hey, I got to get up at, you know, 3 a.m. to do some business. And it does, like, maybe the work-life balance isn't the best. Or is it better because it's like, hey, well, you know, I could have editors like a lot of people do, right? I could have editors across the seas, and when I'm asleep, they're working. And then when I get up, I'm working, and it's just kind of like a team. Like, I mean, I think that's kind of how a lot of business is operated right now. So
yeah, man, I think, like, listen, I don't probably believe or subscribe to like a work-life balance type of thing. Like, I love to work, and I'm in my passion, and I'm in my element, and I love that. And my family gets to come and watch me work, and I get to, you know, be with my family when it's important. I'm very lucky in that way. And I think that, I hope that the world gets to continue moving in that direction. But yeah, I mean, in a borderless economy, the world gets way smaller. You know, I think we're starting to see the constraints of like time zones and all this nonsense. Like, we can just see how the government has basically like put little boxes. We all just live in the box, and we can see how the whole world is built around the box. Bitcoin blows the box up. Now everyone's looking at you like, whoa, I didn't know you were there. Whoa, I didn't know this is there. And we're going to see a crazy rise in innovation and collaboration. And it's going to be just like the world of the individual. And I'm so excited for that.
All right, so I'm going to ask you another question, kind of reverting back to what you were saying about BlackRock and others coming in, because we kind of got away from, you know, traditional finance. But, you know, we've seen the development of these ETF products, and it seems like they've kind of, I guess, added validity in a sense to at least the normie person, right? Because they can go to their financial advisors and say, hey, I want an ETF or whatever it is, like some sort of exposure to Bitcoin. Now they at least have to have that conversation. Is that something that worries you, though, as like an advocate for self-custody and kind of, maybe I'll get into my tinfoil hat theory here in a minute.
Put it on, man.
Yeah. I think Coinbase and FTX Coinbase could be the next FTX, and it could be monumentally bigger.
Yeah.
And that's because 8 of the 11 Bitcoin ETFs in the U.S. are custodied by Coinbase. Seems pretty centralized to me.
Dude, including Sailor's coins. Like plus Sailor's coins. I think that there's two maybe conspiracies here. One is like the honeypot at Coinbase is so insane. If there is not already hundreds of black hat hackers working together to try to socially engineer in Coinbase, and I'm talking like you could take 5 to 7 years to dedicate your life socially engineering Coinbase, and that would pay off in droves. Like, there is a serious problem with the amount of centralization and the honeypot that exists in Coinbase. And so that's one side. But the other side is just like 6102 2.0. There's, you know, Trump wants to create a, what did he say? Something that won't affect the budget with 1 million coins. It's like, hello, why don't we just take the coins that are in Coinbase? That seems like seems pretty budget neutral to me. And so I think that just because that risk exists, retail, and like you're the putter here, you're getting the ball into the cup. It's like, we need to educate like crazy why self-custody is important. This is why, because, you know, this risk, like your coins are not as valuable, or your wallet is not as valuable as the Coinbase wallet. So if I'm going to put my effort, like hacking your wallet is basically the same as hacking a Coinbase wallet. I should probably just focus on Coinbase Hacking Man because that's like way more fruitful. And so you're safer that way as an individual holding their coins. The $5 wrench attack is like totally not a problem if you just don't store your coins at home. If you've got like a reasonable policy, there's companies advising, YouTube channels. You can, like, it's just simple. Yeah. And self-custody tech has gotten so good where normies can do it. Like, I love the BitKey right now. It's so simple. It feels modern and normie friendly. And so I don't know, man. I am definitely aware of the problems that centralization exists. I've seen this since, like, I watched Mt. Gox collapse. Yeah. So I've been shouting from the rooftops, don't leave your coins in exchange for so long. And I think that we need to 100% educate the masses on how to self-custody and then, or why to self-custody and then how to self-custody. And then the third step, though, is for those plebs to spread the network. This is, at the end of the day, a decentralized cause. And so you watching right now, if you understand the importance of self-custody, do not let friends leave it in. No, oh, I use a custodial platform because it's easier for onboarding. No, it's not. Yeah. It's actually better for theft. And do not support theft. theft either from them directly or indirectly. Like, don't put your friends, imagine being the guy that told your friend, hey, this is easier, just do this. And their coins get stolen. It's like, bro, you knew better. Why didn't you tell me? How could you not let me, you know, go through a little bit of work? I had to write down 12 words and I would be generationally wealthy right now. Like, are you kidding me? Why didn't I just do that? And it's so frustrating to hear people just, you know, oh, I don't care about self-custody. It's probably going to be fine. It's like, screw you, man. It's not going to be fine.
Amen to that, dude. I'm getting jacked up. I want to flip this table over, man. Like, come on. But I mean, with that too, right? I mean, we've got Baldy Locks on the internet, Brian Armstrong telling everybody like, hey, you know, just trust me, bro. I think that was like literally a tweet from him, dude, with all of this.
Didn't SBF have the same one?
Exactly. I mean, he just coincidentally had an interview. I don't know if he caused it. In
dude,
jail.
And he got in trouble for that. Yeah, he wasn't allowed to have a...
He got put in solitary confinement for that, dude.
Oh, I mean, laughing, that
it's
sad.
Absolutely, yeah, it's insane that what we're seeing. But you know, with that, right, I mean, we're not that far removed from an FTX scenario, but I still think like there's these bad actors out there, right? I mean, we did have, you know, give credit to Trump about being, you know, crypto friendly, but he launched a coin. He had the Melania coin. Allegedly, the Baron coin wasn't Baron. I don't know. I mean, like, what do you think of all of this? Because it's like, you know, I want to trust him and I think that he's in, you know, I at least got our best interests at heart. But, you know, the XRP guy being there and all these like different things, you know, he's a money guy at the end of the day. And the guys who have the bags are the ones that want to have the custody like the Black Rocks, right?
Yeah, man, big time. Look, I think that like what you said is super impactful. I want to trust him, but I just don't know. And I think that if you have that same sentiment, I want to trust him, but I just don't know, you should flock towards a monetary protocol that doesn't require you to trust.
Yeah.
The Coinbase protocol for holding money requires you to trust. The ETF protocol for holding money requires you to trust. The MicroStrategy or the Strategy protocol for holding Bitcoin requires you to trust. The Bitcoin protocol does not. And so it's like, why don't we adopt this technology that is so simple? Everyone's still in this high time preference environment. I need more gains. I need more easy. I need more convenience. It's like, no, you need better money. And that's it, period. The North Star here has to be generational wealth. It has to be moving into and down through our generations and our bloodline. And you make value today, you spend less than you earn, and you pass the rest to the next generation or launch it into the future. And, you know, like in my example, in Canada, and this is not even, let's take out the macro. Let's talk about the micro. So in Canada, in 2022, we watched people donating to a group of truckers who wanted to work. They were like, hey, we do good things. We move valuable goods across the country and across the continent. We want to keep working. We don't want medicine in our body to work. And they launched the biggest protest on the face of the earth. It was super peaceful. It was super organized and well done. And the liberals hated it. And they called it terrorist. And so then on a Sunday, speaking of Sundays,
yeah, there we go.
Trudeau, our communist prime minister, says, okay, if you donated to this terrorist organization, you're done. We're shutting off your bank account. It was then a week and a half later determined, hey, actually, you can't do that. You're not allowed to just shut people's bank accounts down. That was deemed illegal. Didn't matter. Bank accounts were, boom, shut off. Mm-hmm. And so that sucked for people who needed to pay rent, buy groceries, pay their power bill, their phone bill, work, communicate, whatever. But the point that I'm making here and getting to is that when you have someone else in control of your money, if you do something that is, you know, on a global scale, fine, but on a political scale, not fine, you are exposed to that being stolen.
Yeah.
And we saw that in real time in Canada. So what's stopping them from being like, oh, you said a bad thing on the internet. Like, we're seeing this in the UK right now. You tweeted the wrong thing. You're going to jail. You tweeted the wrong thing. We're selling your Bitcoin ETF. You're selling your Bitcoin stock. We're selling your strategy stock. And we're taking the proceeds and donating it to, you know, communists for CBDC. And you have nothing you can do about it. But if you have Bitcoin in self-custody and a proper plan set up, it's like, yeah, you're probably going to jail still. But your kids, your wife, your generations to come are protected. They have the wealth. They can escape and evacuate the country, and off you go. And so, you know, am I talking about it? Like, I don't think the majority of people resonate with that. But if there's a chance that you think you are not going to agree with everything that your government does in the future, like, probably need to have money that they can't touch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in America, right? I mean, like, you know, JP Morgan shut off Kanye West. Say what you want about him.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, he was tweeting out some wild shit, but I mean, they shut off his bank accounts and they fully kept Jeffrey Epstein's bank account fully up and running the entire time. Right. So, I mean, I know we're all bumping graduation these days still, but I mean, it's kind of crazy that no matter how much money you have, it's like basically your power at that point in time, right? So Jeffrey Epstein was obviously a massively powerful comparatively, and you know, they just took it all away from Kanye. So I mean, no matter where you're at, I think like it is possible. And it was interesting because I think a lot of Americans still don't know what happened in Canada, have no idea. I think if we were to go ask all these people around here if they knew about the Canadian truckers convoy, like 90% of them would have no idea.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's scored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
Idea.
And what's crazy is in Canada, half the country thinks it was a legitimate terrorist organization. Half the country legitimately thinks there were people with guns on Parliament threatening to kill people, which is not like, that is 100% not the, but that's what the mainstream media reported. That's what the official government statements are saying. Like, it is brutal to see the amount of propaganda and lies spread about what was a peaceful protest. And
yeah.
And last time I checked, Canada was like, it's a pretty free country. We're supposed to be able to say, hey, we don't love this too much. Like, can we change this? And it's just not the case.
Yeah. And Canada's always known for being nice, dude. How can you guys, how can you guys have an unpeaceful process when all you're known for is saying, no, sorry.
Like, sorry guys, we're not going to work right now. I'm really sorry about that.
But. Oh yeah. Sorry. Let me just put a little bit more maple syrup on it for you. Sorry. You know? I mean, but it's absolutely crazy with all of this, right? So, but I got a question for you on Davos, right? Because we had that not too long ago. Maybe it was in November time, December, a few months ago. It almost seemed like it was like a full-fledged Bitcoin meeting or Bitcoin conference, because we had Larry Fink, all these guys basically saying, hey, we've got sovereign wealth funds. We've got all these big dogs looking for Bitcoin. It's just a matter of how much, whether it's 1%, 2%, 5%. Now, we've also had BlackRock release a video where they said like 21 million, and in quotes, it said not a fixed supply. So look, I mean, we're going a lot of tinfoil here, but, you know, is that something that worries you too, where they're going to try to potentially fork? And then it's like, all right, we've already seen how easily people can just buy something, right? Buy a lie, buy what they're told.
Yeah.
BlackRock tells them, hey, buy this Bitcoin Cash kind of equivalent where it's a fork. Nobody else is using it but the BlackRock ETF. Then they got the control. And then it's like a backdoor CBDC. Do you see that as a potential?
Yeah, man, big time. I think that we're talking about kind of the split between, you know, the protocol power and control and the economic nodes having power and control. And I think that disclosure actually doesn't worry me a whole ton because I fought against that disclosure in our financials, and I think it's still out of our financials. But lawyers just put – like lawyers have CYA, right? Okay. Just cover your ass. And it's like – you know, they obviously don't understand the full like protocol or whatever. And to their to be fair, it is a chance that the miners could vote to change the protocol and change the supply. It would be democratic and fair, but that is like there's a non-zero chance that happens. And so if you're BlackRock and you're like, is this fixed? Well, yes, unless everyone votes otherwise, it's probably not a bad thing to just be like, okay, we should probably just like, we'll just say this and then the Bitcoiners hate it and it's like conspiracy, which again is fine. Like I agree with that, but it definitely goes to show how much power and centralization BlackRock has and ultimately what the economic node of BlackRock is and could become. So definitely spidey senses going off. And what's the fix? Well, go figure. It's Bitcoin, real Bitcoin in a wallet that you want to control.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense then. Okay, so knowing that, I guess, with the lawyers in the background kind of makes a little bit more sense and makes me not as worried about it. Because I was worried for a while, but I mean, I guess that, you know, the lawyers. You
yeah,
know,
dude, lawyers, know what they say. It's so funny. And throughout this going public process and kind of what all the like everything that we had to go through and educate the lawyers and everything, they look at things from such a different lens than we do. In my mind, like I'm a visionary and I'm like looking into the future. Lawyers look in the past and like, well, the precedent for this from 1987 is blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, I can see how, you know, someone who's uneducated would conflate these two things, but it's not really conflatable. And so it's kind of like, yeah, it's just yeah. The way that they think is just not the same.
Also, probably an archaic way of thinking and doing things as well. But I
yeah,
mean,
big
so.
Time, man. It's a little bit like if we were a different species on a different planet and they didn't breathe oxygen and there was no oxygen on that planet, I feel like if the lawyers were in charge, they would not do things because of the way oxygen reacted on Earth.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, well, last time we had this thing going on Earth, it's like, well, this is a different environment. This is completely not the same, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, here we are, another day. But with that, right, I mean, we've brought up Canada a little bit, right? The potential of becoming the 51st state. Is that something is that something you're looking forward to or what here?
I think my order of preference. So first and foremost, I hope that Canada just does better things. I think that's like my preference. Frankly, I'm probably against this I would say I'm largely against this, you know, separation of individuals. Like I'm pro-human, I'm pro homo sapien, and I think that governments like to pit us against each other. And so we can see racial groups, we can see different countries kind of like battling, and there's lots of animosity towards Americans in Canada right now, which I find detestable and gross. I'm just like, I'm just pro-human. And so if you want to call us, you know, something else, that's fine. But that's just like, let's just be pro-world, first of all. So, but all that to say, we live in like a bordered society and all the rest of this. So my first choice is that Canada is good. I actually think that Alberta, where I live, has a real shot at being a sovereign nation. I think that we've got so much oil, so much forest, so much fresh water. There's like a real good opportunity for us to actually be a sovereign nation and have monster benefits for our citizens and for our land. And I actually think that, you know, we've outgrown this massive country problem. In the US, you guys are huge, but you have so much control and power at the state level. And that makes it's a lot more decentralized. It makes things a lot harder to do internationally, but it looks a lot closer to the EU model, which is like, you know, smaller governments in more places. And in Canada, you've got literally no power at municipal level.
Yeah.
At the provincial level, you've got moderate value, but the big important things for individuals happen at a federal level. And we've seen Ottawa, our federal kind of government, be corrupt for so long. We've seen that they don't care about the West for so long. I don't know. Maybe it's time to mix things up. Maybe smaller nations is just healthier. We have more people. Like we're like a a large government has to govern more people than ever before. You know, like Canada governs 4 time zones. I read that Russia is 9 time zones. Like, that's so dumb. How do you govern 9 time zones? Like,
that's insane.
Well, someone's having going to bed while someone's just starting their work day. Like, that's insane. This is too big. So I'm obviously like a pro or a no government proponent. I would be pro smaller government in Canada. And if that means, you know, going into like a smaller government level, whether that be like as a state or as a sovereign nation, like smaller is better always. And however that looks, I'm not the, like, I don't know, politics, I don't really do well with that. So yeah.
No, I hear you. But I think it is interesting because you mentioned, you know, how it's kind of like at the state level with things, right? At least in the U.S., where it's almost like the EU model. Well, I mean, we've had, you know, Dennis Porter announcing a lot of potential states implementing a Bitcoin strategic reserve. It's also kind of happened in Canada as well. So what are, I guess, I tell me as an ignorant American who doesn't use maple syrup on a daily basis.
Why not, man? National sugar, let's go.
But how does that work? Where, you know, we're having like cities and, I don't know, provinces, I guess is what it's called, right? Of potentially putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet.
Yeah, so provinces could do that. Cities can't though. Cities need the province's approval to be able to add Bitcoin to their balance sheet. Here's the problem with politicians and with doing this. The finances are governed at a federal level in Canada. The banking system is all governed at a federal level. And so at a provincial level, while the provincial balance sheet is relatively sovereign to the province, it's a massive process to get like sovereignty over the financial ecosystem. And so the risk to the province is not that they can't buy, not that they can't use provincial funds to do that, but if they do, and then the federal politicians cut them off from the federal banking supply, it's like a huge problem. And it would be a big, just like a really, really big problem. And so I think that there's more risk there. Also, I think we've seen politicians in Canada jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon when it's advantageous, and then it ended up hurting them politically as Bitcoin dipped or as Bitcoin got less popular. And so we're seeing like I know our premier in Alberta is a Bitcoiner. I've talked to her multiple times about Bitcoin. She's there. She gets it. Our federal conservative leader is a Bitcoin. I've also talked to him about Bitcoin. I'm actually going to take credit with like finishing his orange pill. I had dinner with him in July 2020. And like 2 months later, he went on this tirade, like pro Bitcoin. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to own that, whether or not it's true. And I think that, but then both those, you know, Bitcoin got less popular. Bitcoin, their opposition started like look at these bad people saying invest in Bitcoin. And then now it's blockchain and now they're silent. And so it's frustrating to see. Ultimately, I'm obviously pro, like as a citizen of that nation or of that province, I am very pro that province having Bitcoin. As an individual who wants individual sovereignty, I don't really care.
Now, where do you think we're going to get here in the next, let's say this cycle, the next three, four years or whatever? Do you think we're going to be more on the digital gold side of things as we're talking about strategic reserve, all these different things? Or do you think we're going to get to that peer-to-peer cash place pretty soon? Because there are some places, and I know that there's growing peer-to-peer, you know, areas around the world, including in Canada, where you can buy a lot of things and live on Bitcoin. So do you think we're going to get there maybe in spots here in this next 4 years?
I think in spots, man. I think that we're still a decade away from actual corporate accepting Bitcoin. Like, you know, you're not walking into Walmart to pay for things in Bitcoin in North America. It's not going to happen in the next 10 years. Or sorry, I think it will, but it'll take about 10 years to get there. And so for now, I think that we're going to be reliant on infrastructure being built to have access to the traditional legacy financial system, but with Bitcoin in self-custody. That's like a big part of our mission is to allow for people to interact with the legacy financial system but maintain their wealth. Right now, especially in Canada, you have two options. You can hold your money in cash. You can't really use cash. Like the other day, I was literally going to buy a sandwich. I had a $50 bill in my hand and they wouldn't take it. I couldn't buy a sandwich. It was ridiculous. So you can hold your money, but you cannot use it. Or you can use your money, right, in the bank, but you cannot hold it. It can be taken away. And I personally have had like 7 figures of dollars, like frozen, not available. The bank does not like you anymore. You are shut down and it's going to take you months to get this money back. Like that is a personal story that I have experienced. And so if you can't hold and use your money, that's indicative of a problem.
Yeah.
And I want to, yeah, like, let's get an infrastructure just developed so that you can hold your money in Bitcoin in self-custody and use it by interacting with the legacy financial system.
So as a pro I am, I just tossed up the alley-oop, dude. Wow. What are you releasing here at Bitcoin Well recently, right? You just told me right before we got on here, what are you releasing here so you can utilize that?
As of right now, we've got the ability to buy Bitcoin from your balance of Bitcoin Well into Lightning, like boom, instantly. In both the US, we've had it in Canada now for about 4 or 5 months, and it's coming to the US. In Canada, this infrastructure is set up. You pay your bills with Bitcoin or on Lightning. You can sell and get money directly into your bank. And we're doing that now in the US, trying to bring this vision of replace your bank with Bitcoin Well into the USA. And so that started with, you know, on-ramp, off-ramp. Now we're moving, you know, but like, it's so funny, man. The American people just do not, I think, understand the importance of self-custody yet. It's like, hey, you should self-custody. Oh, I don't like UTXOs. It's like, well, just manage your UTXO. So here's a pile of education on that. It's like, okay, well, let's make this easier. How about, you know, so now what we're thinking is let's add Lightning. And then the problem is like, well, okay, but Lightning's not very safe. So the solution here is being able to go from dollars in your bank to Lightning in self-custody. And self-custody I'm going to use loosely here. I understand the majority of people use Lightning in a custodial environment.
Yeah.
But I think that like self-custody Lightning is actually not that hard. But if you're not going to do that, you should continue to stack on Lightning in a custodial environment. And then set a threshold, whether that be 1 million sats or like a reasonable UTXO level. And then we're actually launching swaps. So you'll be able to send your Lightning back to Bitcoin Well and have one on-chain transaction going to like ideally your hardware wallet or cold storage or at least self-custody. And so having the ability to buy frequently off-chain and then swap on-chain once a year, once a quarter, once a month, whatever you're deeming your UTXO strategy to be, is kind of a big deal because I don't think that you guys yet quite have that in America. And so I'm a big proponent for stack off-chain, store on-chain. And that's like, depending on when this airs, that's live right now at bitcoinwell.com, which I'm super stoked on.
Yeah, and you mentioned the differences kind of, you think like in America, people haven't really gotten to the self-custody route. Talk about the differences of launching in Canada and then kind of moving over to the US, because we talked a little bit about it on stage here the other day, but it seems like the US has been more difficult for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, just
dude, this is what I mean by when the platforms that exist make it too easy, you develop a soft culture. And you're like, I'm going to be audacious here. I'm going to call out all you American Bitcoiners. Y'all are soft, dude. You guys don't know what real Bitcoin looks like. There's obviously like a group of maxis and like mad respect, but the majority of Bitcoiners are like self-custody is second. And that's because you haven't experienced the max pain that can kind of happen in a custodial environment. And so the fact that we've got like the Swans, the Rivers, the Strike, like making it so easy, and like to their credit, they're allowing for self-custody, but they're not forcing the self-custody. And so these people are, you know, the ones that these new Bitcoiners are looking up to. They see them building a business where self-custody is not the focus. It's a feature, but not the focus. And they're like, oh, well, if they don't care about self-custody, this is like a little bit of extra work for me. I'm not going to do it though, because it's fine. They're allowing me to do this. It can't be that bad. And I think that that's a bug. That's like a problem. It's creating a culture of complacency. And I think that that's like probably the biggest underlying risk to Bitcoin culture in America is too much ease, too much convenience around buying Bitcoin without enough emphasis on storing, holding Bitcoin. And so, yeah, man, when we came into the market, we were like unapologetic. Like, this is the hard path. This is not the easier way to build a Bitcoin business. But as someone that's been doing this for as long as I have, I know that doing the easy thing always blows up in your face. And like, hey, you know, we're seeing custodial platforms, custodial Bitcoin, quote unquote, maxi run platforms start to fail, start to implode here in America. And, you know, the consequences of business are real. I just do not believe that as a Bitcoiner who knows better, we should allow and enable people to leave funds on a platform. Like, and I, like, it's just, it just cannot happen. You just, we know better. We have to stop the madness.
Look, I mean, you're calling the Americans soft, man. While I'm sitting right here, I might have to come across this table on you, Adam, and knock those glasses off. I'm kidding. But with that, like, what do you think it's going to take for people? Do you think it's going to take some pain? Do you think, like, I mean, I do agree with you that, you know, it is an issue in America. And I think part of it is, like, we have the dollar. Like, I don't know if, like, you know, when you go to, like, hey, why would I go spend my Bitcoin somewhere else unless somebody's giving me a massive discount to do it, right? Like, you know, we were talking about the coffee shop downstairs, right? The Capital One one. They're, like, 50% off if you use
Capital One.
Yeah, if you use the Capital One card, right? So they say that, and, like, people won't use their Bitcoin to buy a coffee unless they get some sort of discount like that, right? Totally. So, like, what is it going to take to say, hey, all right, we need to move to this peer-to-peer cash. We need to, you know, kind of go into self-custody. Is it going to take something like what happened in Canada, like massive amounts of frozen bank accounts? Or, like, what do you kind of foresee as, you know, the pushover? Is it just going to be a gradual kind of move over?
Well, I certainly hope for a gradual move over.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully, if like, here's how the market generally works. It's carrot or it's stick, and carrot looks like incentive or education and or passion. Stick looks like maximum pain, and so maximum pain is usually the most efficient way to get people to change their behaviors. But hopefully, like what I said, resonates with three or four of you. Bitcoin, well, then in 3 or 4 years gets 3 or 4 competitors, you know, forcing self-custody. As a result, more people are exposed to the importance of self-custody. And this kind of becomes a natural, organic, like, you know, almost like, why would I keep my coins on a different platform? Like literally, as far as fee comparison, you know, as a non-custodial platform, we are the exact same. As far as services provided, we've got like the same services. You can deposit your paycheck and buy Bitcoin on Lightning, direct to your custody. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't take all that in one single transaction and let it run if it's the same price. And so hopefully we get some competition. Hopefully we get a market that also agrees with me and supports that. And hopefully this, this like convenience-led culture of, you know, when, like, at the end of the day, when you're a VC-funded Bitcoin company, you're measured, your next check comes because metrics, and self-custody is bad for short-term metrics.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we are publicly traded, but I have, you know, the Zuck luxury of like having the voting block, and I get to have a low time preference while leading this business. And so, we've got low time preference, Bitcoiners in the chairs. We've got a low time preference build mindset. And I am committed and willing to take the hard path to ensure that society is better off in America, in Canada, and ultimately globally. So, yeah.
Yeah. So they say that the best investment outside of Bitcoin is companies that are able to obtain and keep obtaining Bitcoin because they're having that long-term outlook. So is that playing a role in here where you're being sneaky with me, Adam, where you're saying, hey, I can earn more Bitcoin with all of this too?
Yeah, man. I think so. I think that, so we have the unique position to be in the financial services ecosystem surrounding Bitcoin. There is no reason we can't stack with our customers. There's no reason we can't enable our machines in Canada and our Bitcoin portal broadly to, you know, our profit be portions of it in Bitcoin. We're obviously a Bitcoin business, as you know, as I've been saying, I'm a low time preference leader and builder, and I really want to see our balance sheet stacked and stocked with Bitcoin. And so, yeah, man, I think that Bitcoin, well, if I have it my way, which means, you know, obviously like the voting block maintains, and then also that, you know, market forces and economics don't force us to, like, the Bitcoin on the balance sheet number will continue to go up. And that's kind of my goals, my desires. That's my personal goals. That's my corporate goals. Bitcoin, well, I joke with my wife. We've got 4 kids. I tell her I got 5. I got a 5th one. And it's Bitcoin, well. And so I've got big hopes and dreams for our organization. And I'm pumped to be in America, man.
There we go. All right, Adam, we've gone this long and I haven't brought up the glasses. Only a little bit, man. Tell us, what is this, a new style you got going on here,
man,
or what?
What's this, is the a deal? So I took this vow of being quote unquote convenience maxi, contrary to what I just said, but let me explain. maybe about 8 months ago. And I started seeking maximum convenience in places in my life that don't matter so that my convenience meter was full or was available for things that do. And things that do looks to me like health and business, basically low time preference things that are difficult to do in the short term, but then ultimately pay dividends. And I got down this crazy rabbit hole about, like, you know, obviously seed oils, and then that led me to blue lights.
Yeah.
And I noticed, man, my sleep dramatically improving when I'm not exposed to blue light anyway. And it's like here, you know, we got like the fluorescence and the lights and like, you know, the studio and like all the rest of it. I'm on the screen, you know, all day. And it's, yeah, it's crazy. So if I'm looking at a screen or, you know, when I'm starting to get a little bit more comfortable. I've been wearing these at night for, I don't know, a couple months now. Massive improvement. And it's like, hey, why? Like, if it works at night, it probably also works during the day.
Yeah.
And so I am a blue light disrespecter, as they say. And yeah, massive, massive improvement to my sleep. Also, like, watching what I eat, man, it's insane. Just checking and making small little decisions, you know. If, like, just check the ingredients. Is it filled with diesel fuel in canola or vegetable oil or not? And, like, with two options there, just pick the not one. I wouldn't say I'm like a, you know, I don't have the, like, I'm not all seed oil free or like blue light free, but my wife and I are subscribing to this like 80-20 rule. 80% of the time we want to be eating, you know, natural, clean food, not like being inundated by blue lights. And, you know, but again, it's like, that's very inconvenient. And so I had to kind of restructure my life to have things that were convenient in order, like, that don't really matter. And so, yeah, man, that's the, I don't know. They look kind of goofy, and I feel a little bit like Kanye West in a bad way. But here we are, and maybe I'll have a good sleep tonight. I don't know.
There we go, dude. Hey, dude, everybody tries to fit in. You gotta want to stand out. That's it at the end of the day, right? That's what he says. So, you know, but with that, we're here in Austin, right? I think last time we saw in Nashville. So you got a little bit of Austin barbecue.
Yeah,
I gotta ask you, Texas or Tennessee barbecue?
Whoa,
I'm putting you on the spot. So
I'm gonna get on blast here. Yeah, man. Like, I got two of these Austin, Texas boys sitting right here. I got Opti on this side, Brandon over here.
Look, but I went to school in Memphis.
Okay,
so
okay.
I do know Tennessee barbecue. I dabble, man. I dabble, but it is very different.
Listen, I'm not sure my palate has evolved enough to like really know. I will say, when I cook a brisket, I cook a Texas style brisket. So I'm probably partial to a Texas style barbecue. But listen, man, nothing compares to an Alberta beef ribeye steak.
Here we go.
And
get
so
out of here.
All you Texas barbecue boys, gotta get up to Alberta, have a big, juicy, fatty ribeye. Alberta grass-fed beef is number one in the whole world. And when y'all become part of the Alberta nation, I will show you a good time.
Go. Oh my God. All right. Well, I'm going to keep putting you on the spot here because
let's go.
There is the Nashville and the Austin rivalry in the Bitcoin space. Where's the capital?
Dude. Well, I mean, like, what are we at, takeover day right now? Yep. We're like sitting in Bitcoin Park, the Nashville coming into Texas. I'm actually a little bit removed from the drama. I get to watch it from an outside in. I think that like competition is good. I think that friendly competition is good. I think that we're all building towards, like, you know, sovereign individuals and generational wealth. And so, yeah, like, I like the heat. I like a little friendly competition. I'm friends with most of my competitors. And I think that's like super positive. I hope that Nashville and Austin have like friendly competition in the way that you and your friends, like, when you're golfing with your friends or you're playing sports with your friends, you're like, oh, I want to kill you. And then you're like, you know, after the match, it's like, this was amazing. Thank you for making me better. You suck, and I'll make you better if you want. and then we're, you know, we're off and we're buds. And I hope that that's where things are going and the like rivalries around the space. I think that it probably is. I think that Bitcoiners, naturally, you can't really be a Bitcoiner if you're anti-competition, and you can't really be a Bitcoiner if you're anti-human. And so you probably just naturally get there.
All right, I'll ask you another question on the competition. So, America or Canada for Bitcoiners, and why is America so much better at being building Bitcoiners? I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, it's not. Yo, per capita, Canada has the high. I have heard so many people say this, per capita, Canada has the highest rate of Bitcoiners than any other country in the world. We are crushing it with prominent Bitcoiners coming out of that nation. It's just because we have pain, though. It's because we have a lot more pain. We have six banks. I've been debanked since 2016, 2017-ish. Like, when you've been debanked that long, it's just a result of it. Like, you guys have 400 banks in America.
Wait, do you still not have a bank account?
So, funny you say that. I kind of have a bank account. My wife had one. She actually recently just lost her bank, so I was using that one. But then when we went public, we had a bank finally offer us checking account services. And we wrote into the contract for our checking account that the CEO of the company, whoever they may be at the time, has access to a checking account at that bank. So I do have a small credit union in Alberta giving me a checking account, which is, I feel like it's a luxury. I have a debit card now.
Look
at me interacting with the fiat world. But I think just per capita, Canada has got just so many Bitcoiners.
No, they do.
North America generally, I'm also seeing a pile out of Mexico right now. It's good, man. The world is Bitcoinatizing. And in 25 years, we're going to look back and be like, whoa, the stage has been being set for so long. And it's happening now.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, it is happening now, right? I mean, we got the president of the United States talking at the Bitcoin conference when we were there last, a couple months ago. And then, now they got to follow it up again this year. I don't know how they're going to do that in Vegas.
You know what's interesting? And I don't know if you had the same experience, but my wife has heard me saying all these crazy things about Bitcoin, fix the money, fix the world, talking about how broken money endangers the world, so on. And after RFK finished, who blew me away, RFK's speech was, I think, the greatest surprise.
Yeah.
And Trump's was as expected, just a bunch of mumbo jumbo written by some halfway Bitcoiner. But RFK, you could tell, did the work. And Christina looked at me after, my wife, and she was like, isn't it crazy that you've been saying all this stuff for 5, 6, 7 years? And people have called, they make fun of me or call me a conspiracy or whatever. And now we've got, politicians of the free world parroting and saying the same thing and reading the same books. And it's how far we've come. And it's pretty, I don't know. Maybe you've had that experience. It's insane, man.
All right. So how are you taking that, man? Are you all right, now it's time to dunk on people? Or are you saying hey, I was right? How are you balancing that? Because I've had that same kind of thing. I actually had one of my buddies, he texted me a screenshot over the summer when Bitcoin, shortly after the Bitcoin conference, when Bitcoin was at 60K, in quotes, "Oh, Bitcoin's going to hit 100K this year." Then Bitcoin hits 100K, he buys Bitcoin, and then now he's bitching at me because we're sitting at 85. And I'm like, dude, I told you when it was at 40, 60K, and you were like, no, no, no. And then now you buy it, and of course, it dips a little bit. So how are you balancing all of that?
Yeah, I don't think "I told you so" is ever very helpful. One of my favorite phrases, and I actually give a talk, I love giving this presentation called "Jesus is a Bitcoiner." And it talks about how the teachings of Jesus in the Bible from 2 millennia ago actually correlate to, a Bitcoiner and a Bitcoiner's life. And, my favorite one is what we say in Bitcoin, "Stay humble, stack sats." And that is so grounding, so pure. And you need to, because I think that we lose a little bit of we lose credibility, we lose favor, we lose trust when we get "I told you so, you're so dumb," blah, blah, blah. And it's if we adopt a spirit of grace and love and humility, that probably advances the mission better. It feels worse, right? It's kind of nice to be you were wrong, I was right, dunk on you a little bit. That certainly feels better. That's very high time preference behavior. I feel the low time preference Bitcoiner behavior is to be yo, it's all good. Here's how you can respond now. Yeah. Here's some more education. My grace should play through really well with you, and you should want to learn more from me now, because I'm not making you feel bad. Generally speaking, people want to be with people that make them feel good, not bad. And so as Bitcoiners, if we make more people feel good, we will have more people wanting to be influenced by us. And if more people want to be influenced by us, we have more chance with the chipping, right? We have more chances with the putter getting straight into the hole. We have more balls to putt into the hole, maybe, if you will, to keep this golf analogy from earlier going. And so I feel like, yeah, certainly my ego sometimes is like, ooh, I was right. Not going to tell everyone. But that probably doesn't advance my mission. And so I try as best I can to like, all right, you know, and I'm like, I'm a Christian. And so I like have a, like a really prominent prayer life. And I like, you know, try to work on this, like this mindset of changed desires is kind of what I'm really leaning into right now. And like a changed desire comes from an immense amount of work. And I believe a spiritual place. And so it's like, This is kind of, I think, the best path forward that will eventually, advance the mission.
Amen to that. I love it. All right, Adam, thank you so much for coming in and hanging out with me a little bit here in Austin. Why don't you tell people where they can find out more about you, Bitcoin Well, and what else you got going on?
Yeah, man. I'd love if you followed me on X, @AdamO'Brien_. I'm on Nostr, adam@btcw.app. That's my Nippo 5. I'm a Nippo 5 maxi because I think NPubs are dumb and I think Nippo 5 is like the way to go. So @AdamO'Brien_ on X and adam@btcw.app on Nostr. Go to bitcoinwell.com/greencandle.
There we go.
If you want to stack sats into self-custody and really like, I've been building in public for so long. I didn't have the luxury of like kind of hiding behind in this massive dev team and stuff. I still don't. I love building in public. And so when you sign up for the platform, like DM me and tell me all the things you hate. I love hearing what people hate. The compliments are nice once in a while because I don't have to cry so much at night, but, hearing what you hate gives me an opportunity to make it better. And again, like we're building this together. This is a self-custody platform for Bitcoiners that want to see a sovereign individual and want to have sovereign generational wealth. And so, if you want to help with that, please tell me what you hate so we can make it better.
Amen to that. And they are very open. I can attest to that. I've given them some feedback and you guys have, gotten on it very quickly. And on top of that, they're psychos. Every time you buy Bitcoin, they give you wishing well tokens so you can get more sats after buying Bitcoin. So definitely appreciate what you're building. And, man, thanks so much.
Thanks, man. Let's get some barbecue. It's go time.
Yeah, let's go eat.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.